That's right, baby. That's right, it's me. You know who it is. Josh Accardo, Slam Pig Podcast. I want to thank you for joining me again for another great show. We'll get to my guest in a second. She's incredible. Really excited to have her. But before I introduce her, I had a situation recently where someone attacked me because of the name of the show. Someone who claimed they were a feminist attacked the name of the show and basically said the show was shitty and insulted all the women that have been on the show, the amazing women who have come onto this show and shared themselves with you, telling their stories. I mean, I'm kind of beside myself with more just disappointed and sad that in this world, if someone's popular like this person was, their social media, they have a good following, they could literally go out there and say something's awful and people follow them blindly. And these people insulted my show, insulted me, called me crazy names, called me murderer, called me I induce vomit upon viewing. I mean, just ridiculous, childish things without listening to one episode, not listening to the episode where Mia Isabella talked about how it was to become trans, where Venus Lux talked about how hard her life was growing up, getting into transition, being transgender, about Christina, who's going to tell you about some stuff she's went through that's ultra personal, and about every other woman who has come on this show and revealed themselves. I mean, this show is called Slam Pig Podcast. Yes, is it an offensive title? It is. It's more about irony than it is about calling anyone a slam pig. The show is about embracing female empowerment. The show is about breaking down stereotypes one joke at a time. I mean, it's a comedic foundation. Don't get me wrong. It's a comedic show. Lighten up. But at the same time, if you listen to the product and you listen to these women talk about themselves and their lives and the stuff they go through and the causes they fight for, how dare you? That being said, I'm really happy that here, episode 98, I have on actress Christina DeRosa. She's been featured in a number of different films and TV. I actually saw her in an episode of Blackish, which is a great show, and I reached out to her, and luckily enough, she answered back, and I had a chance to talk to her, and she shares so many intimate things in this interview that if someone was facing the plight that she faces within this interview and they're listening to this thing right now, it's going to help them, and that's what I bring to the table. That being said, we recorded through Skype, and there was kind of a ambient sound in the background. I'm sorry, I don't have any producers or engineers. It's the Josh show. I run everything here. So I think that's why you listen to it, because it is mom and pop. And I'm here doing my thing, and you're my congregation. If you're listening, I got nobody else. This woman insulted me on Twitter. She insulted my guests, and I'm so happy to have Christina on, because this episode truly shows what my show does. It truly shows it. And if you listen to it, you know, all right. So I'm kind of preaching to the choir, but tell your friends, because Christina's awesome. You're going to love her. Enjoy. Today, I'm very lucky, more so than ever, because I have on actress, saucy, Latina, the lovely, talented Christina DeRosa. Say hello to everybody.
Hello. Ciao.
So we were supposed to give everybody some context, all the listeners. We were supposed to link up when I was back in LA, and we couldn't make it happen, but now we're doing it via Skype, which is so cool, right?
So modern. So yes. 2016.
So technology-oriented, you and I are. So I guess we should start at the beginning. I saw you in an episode of Blackish.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, that was really cool. And then that's how I basically said, I want to see what she's all about and get her on the show and blah, blah, blah. And now you're here. So exciting.
Blah, blah, blah. I say that all the time, too. Blah, blah, blah. It's so New York. It's a very New York thing.
It is.
Right?
Where are you from?
I'm born in Long Island, Long Island,
that's
New York.
Right. I remember we talked about that, I think. Yeah, so you're born in Long Island. And what is your ethnicity?
Italiana.
Really? But do you play, like, Latin women a lot? I feel like you would.
I do. I played like a Latina on Devious Maid.
Yeah, yeah.
I was on Telemundo like years ago. I play a lot of like ethnically ambiguous.
But
like,
you're
brown hair, brown eyes. They can't figure out what you are. They just throw you in that pile.
It's so funny because when I ever go on auditions, I always get like, I get sent in for hipster guy, and then there's 20,000 guys that are way more hipster than me. Or I get sent in for handsome guy, and there's like 20,000 guys way better looking than me. I understand what you mean, how you kind of fall in a category, and it's like, okay, well, she's like brown hair, brown eyes. See, I thought you were Latin, and I'm a Sicilian man, and I thought you were Latin. Usually I know my Italian women.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, my family is Sicilian, not Napoli.
Really? So you're
like,
fiery.
Kind of like related here.
How many people have you punched in the face?
Have you been to Italy?
I have been. I've been all over Italy.
Oh, yeah. Me too. Oh my
Where is your favorite part of Italy?
Oh, I love Venice. It's like a fairy tale.
Yeah,
Venice
is great.
It's like a storybook fairy tale. I mean, I think I literally had an orgasm on like a gondola ride because it was just so beautiful.
Was something going on in that ride? I mean,
no, just being in Italy was enough for me.
The smell itself kind of takes you out of the fantasy there. Like I love Venice, and Florence is my favorite city. But I remember being in Venice and just coming in on the boat to Venice. It was breathtaking. But yeah, I remember the smell being like, hey, I'm really in Venice.
Yeah, I'm okay with smells. I've traveled and I shot a movie in India, so I know all about smells. I love to travel. Like,
so
I love
for travel. The listeners, Christina works a ton, and she's done a. I was looking at your stuff, and it's such a wide variety of stuff. It goes from like you being this. I remember I saw one clip where you're like this topless woman running around. The next is like this serious. Like it's so funny. How you have such a wide variety of roles. So you say you shot a film in India.
I did.
Did you get sick?
Not at all. That's like the one question that everybody asks. And it's a lot of people ask that question who've never been to India. India is one of my favorite continents, countries in the world. I fell in love with the soul, the energy, the people, the food. I was vegetarian for about 15 years of my life. And in India, most restaurants are vegetarian unless it specifically says on the outside of the restaurant, non-N-O-N, veg, V-E-G.
Mm-hmm.
Like, every other restaurant is like a vegetarian restaurant. So they cater to vegetarians. The temples I went into, the people I met, the love I felt. I was taken in, I mean, in addition to shooting a movie there, which was pretty cool, I went to temples, I went to orphanages, I fed children in orphanages, I stayed with families that treated me like their daughter. Treated me like one of their own.
Yeah.
And it was just a beautiful culture that I embraced. I am so in love with India and I can't wait to go back.
Yeah, yeah, I would never want to go. Even after all that, I still would never go to India.
Really?
I travel a ton and I'm like a miserable traveler. Like even it's kind of funny. Like it's just every time someone like comes up to me and they're I backpacked through blah blah blah, and I go, yeah. How long's that flight? Like, I just am so much more concerned about my comfort than anything else. And I travel a ton, so it's not like I'm some rube that sits at home. I live in New York City. I go to LA twice a month. Like, I travel to Italy and Paris and Spain. But at the end of the day, I really want to just sit here. Like, if I had my choice,
really?
I would
I actually love being on a plane. Because even though nowadays you can get on the internet and still be on social media and be tweeting and be doing a million things while you're on the plane, I actually like the idea of like pretending I'm like set back in time and feeling a little old fashioned, not being on social media, reading a good book, seeing a good movie, like just enjoying this feeling of like alone time, this feeling of being up in the air and like away from like everything else. And I love traveling. I don't mind the plane rides. I end up meeting friends. Oh my God! I made two of my dear friends I met on a plane. Swear to God.
Are you traveling first class though? Like, I mean, let's be honest with the audience. You're like, you're an attractive woman. I'm sure the way you travel and the way you do things, your experience are going to be different than say an unattractive person. Like, and especially.
Well, you said you're going out for handsome men.
Well, hey,
Seriously, you cannot.
You didn't call me handsome. Someone in a casting agency said, let's lump this guy in with 50 other guys who are way better looking than him. So when you're traveling...
And you're a hipster, too. You're a handsome hipster.
Yeah, I love how those are the two things sticking out right now so far in this interview. My hipster handsomeness. But I can see what you're saying. Maybe you're more in tune with your chi or whatever they call it. I'm a super New York. It's really hard for me to be like, yeah, let's just go and do an adventure. Even though I do adventures, I reluctantly do adventures. Everything I do is reluctant. That's where our personalities differ.
But that works for you, obviously.
It's
not broken, don't fix it.
Exactly. Yeah, I was in therapy yesterday, and I was talking to my therapist about this, and he was like, we were talking, I forgot what we were talking about. Basically, I was irritated about something, and he looks at me and he goes, hey, you need to just accept that this is how it's going to be for you. That's like the truest shit anyone's ever said. I feel like you're like a meditator. Are you like one of those meditators?
I do. I like visualization. I like yoga. I like all practices that are active meditations. Uh-huh. I'm better at, like, I'm a chanter. I practice Buddhism, so I'm all about chanting, which is, like, basically an active meditation. So, yes, I do.
Is that, like, an L.A. thing? Were you this tough chick from Long Island, and then you moved to L.A., and all of a sudden you're, like, kale and kabuki and...
Well, here's the thing. I told my mom when I moved from New York, she's like, okay, you're moving to L.A. She's like, you could never get fake boobs, and you could never dye your hair blonde. So far, so good.
So far, none of those things have happened.
Thank you, promise. So far, so good. But yes, I've definitely become more spiritual. Mm-hmm. I've become even healthier. Like, I've always been a healthy eater and very food conscious of, like, what goes in my body. But I've never done more cleanses. Like, I never did cleanses when I lived in New York.
Sure.
Now it's like, yeah, we do a cleanse, like, all the time because that's just what you do. Because you live in L.A., you just do a cleanse. You do a juice cleanse. You do a parasite cleanse. You do these crazy cleanses you've never even heard of. Because that's just what you do.
People's colons in L.A. must just be spick and span.
Please. Yeah.
The amount of evacuation that people in L.A. are doing.
But it's also like a gigantic state to live in, which is so inundated with the entertainment industry. So it's kind of nice that it has that balance of people who are, you do need a spiritual practice. You need something bigger than you to hang on to because you can get swept away with all the craziness of the industry.
All those egos, man. I mean, people better get into something. You know what I mean? You better find Jesus. Find somebody. You better find somebody. Lord, help me. Find me. I was in L.A. It's hard to eat terribly in L.A. I was staying in Venice, and literally, I could see why people are happy. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I got a little cappuccino. I'm eating this little salad, and I'm like, who the fuck are you? Who the fuck are you? And then I got back here, and it's like back to normal. Do you miss New York? But Long Island, it's not New York City. It's you know, it's its own thing. So it's a suburb, I'm assuming, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm born in Long Island, but I've also lived Upper West Side,
okay.
Upper East Side. So I consider myself a city girl. Like, I love cities, and I could never live, like, in the middle of America, like, on a farm and not have any nightlife and just be really peaceful. That would get old within, like, 2 days.
What do you, what kind of stuff, when you lived out here in New York, I'm assuming you were training out here, right, to be what you are, an actress, maybe dance, all of the above.
Yeah.
What's some of the things you did here in New York? Like, what was your thing? What was your New York thing? Or have you lost that? Have all the meditation, did you cleanse it out of yourself, all the New Yorker in you, or do you remember what it was?
No, I mean, I think you could take the girl out of New York, but you can't take the New York out of me, and I'll
Amen.
Be there. I'll be there in July, and, like, I can't wait to, like, have some New York pizza and, like, just stay up all night and, like, walk a lot. Nobody walks in L.A. That's probably, like, one of the biggest differences. It's, like, you drive your car down the street where you really could walk, but nobody walks, and for whatever reason, they don't walk. We exercise, and we do yoga, and we go hiking, like, when it's, like, we drive to the hike.
Yeah.
But I miss, like, New York. I miss the city of New York being such a port city where you could just walk everywhere and you could see people and get on the subway and have these interactions and just the grittiness of it all.
What was your favorite New York routine when you were here, when you were living here? I'm always interested because I'm a guy that might have to move soon, and I don't want to let go of New York because I love New York. I'd much prefer to be bi-coastal if I had to be anything. So I think about all the things that I can do here that I can only do here that are really particular to me, you know, to my personality, how I've embodied New York and made it mine. What for you, when you were living on the Upper East Side, Upper West Side, was there like a certain kind of night that you can remember that was kind of your New York routine? There's a certain restaurant you went to, certain club, certain bar. I mean,
I think
you have that?
I'm a person who loves variety, so I don't really like going back to the same place like way too many times. I mean, I always go somewhere different and kind of step it up and have an adventure. However, I love the freedom of living in New York, knowing that I can get a good meal at like 2 a.m.
Yeah.
Here in LA, there's only maybe a couple diners that are 24 hours or a couple places that are like half decent, but it's not the same. I mean, you could be drinking till much later in New York, you could be out partying till much later in New York. It's just different. People stay out later. Here in LA, you just wake up early and you go on a hike or you do your yoga class, and it's like a different mentality. It's the people I miss the most. I mean, it's not even so much a place.
Yeah.
Because you can replace a place or a bar or a restaurant or whatever. But you can't replace people, and it's the people I miss the most. It's the energy, it's the honesty, the upfrontness. I miss being hit on by New Yorkers. That's what I miss. No, seriously, like when a New York guy hits on you versus an LA guy, it's very different.
Give me an example. Like, give me like a New York example.
A New York guy would be like, "You're fucking beautiful. I really want to like marry you. What can I do to get your number? Like, let's just be honest with each other here. Like, let's just be honest. Like, I'm not going to leave here until we have a conversation and you give me your number." And like, it's just so honest, and you almost have to like applaud that vulnerability and honesty. And it doesn't come off as vulnerable, but in order to say something like that, they're actually speaking from their heart. And there's no game. It's like, "I'm going to call you tomorrow. I'm going to call you right now to give you your number. Like, I'm not going to call you tomorrow. Like, I'm going to call you right now." It's just an honesty.
How attractive a guy would you have to be for that to work? It's super aggressive.
I love passion. I get very attracted to passion, confidence, and honesty.
Yeah.
I see a lot of bullshit here, and a lot of guys, you know, it's just, you know, they're trying to hit on you by saying like what kind of car they drive or by telling you what they do, who they know, and it's like, that's all the fluff. Like, that's not gonna be interesting at 4 a.m. when we're up at night, like after making love and we're having a conversation. Like, that's not going to stimulate my mind.
Sure.
I'm way more attracted to what's going on the inside. Honestly, this might sound weird, but I've probably never really gone for like super, I've never really dated like super attractive guys. Like, I'm serious. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're super, there's that song, "If you want to be happy for the rest of your life,
make an ugly woman your wife." Yeah.
Never make a pretty woman your life. It's like, I never really went for super hot, hot, hot guys. And I don't know. I'm not saying you can't be hot and be awesome and be intelligent and be everything. I'm not saying that. But for whatever reason, my track record has been like, guys with just really big hearts.
Yeah, you hear that out there, everybody? Just if you see Christina in the street and if you're a goofy-looking dude,
come on,
crazy strong, be really, really aggressive, borderline sexual harasser, and you got the number, and maybe even a 4 a.m. chat. Maybe even a 4 a.m. chat.
But if you're too hot.
But if you're really good looking, get the fuck out, all right? Take a walk. Is it because, you know, I agree with what you're saying. I know exactly what you're talking about. And that was very genuine. I appreciate you saying that, because I think this show has a lot of female listeners, and I think it's good for them to hear a female who's attractive but also in the industry say, "Hey, you know, I'm not really interested in you if you don't have anything to say." I think in this swipe left, swipe right kind of world that we live in, where everyone's more addicted to popularity than actually being good at what they do, it's all about your follows and your links, or not your links, your clicks and your retweets, as opposed to, "Oh, are you really good at what the fuck you do, or are you just pandering to the lowest common denominator in hopes to get as many followers as possible?" And I appreciate that, and I'm glad I have you on my show, because people need to hear more of that kind of shit, where goofy dudes and goofy people are getting hot people. And that's what you're doing. You're like a generous person. I would love to see like the dudes that you consider not the hot guy. I'd love to see, like, it's probably guys who are super attractive too. That's what's great. I can't wait. I wish there was a list that I can, like, pictures of dudes you could just forward to me right now, and I could be like, this guy's like a model still, but he's just not.
No, I mean, I really honestly haven't dated even actors, models, like, when I was younger, when I was like 16, 17, 18 even, like, a little bit here and there, because it was exciting and hot, but as I got older, I was like, okay, get out of here.
When you learn your lesson, you knew it was cracking.
Yeah, I mean,
When did you start getting into to acting? When did you decide, like, hey, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to make a go of it. How old were you? When did you know for sure?
My first musical was with Natalie Portman when we were Munchkins in The Wizard of Oz in Long Island, New York. So I started singing and dancing at a really little age. Uh-huh. I was like Orphan Annie and Annie, and I had a big Broadway voice, and it was like boom. And like, so I actually thought I was going to like stay in New York my whole life and be on Broadway, and like that was the path that mm-hmm. was set out for me. That was going to be my journey in life. And then my life took a totally different turn after my first year of college at the Boston Conservatory. So I knew in college, I knew in high school, and I knew in college that I wanted to pursue acting. But I also thought it was going to be more Broadway, musical theater, singing, dancing, acting.
Sure.
So after my first year of college, full scholarship, Boston Conservatory, musical theater, I took the expression break a leg, literally. And I fell, and I broke my leg on stage.
So you got let's rewind. So you got a scholarship to the Boston Conservatory. So that means what do you have to go through to have that happen? Like what do they take into account?
I mean, not just like the essays and the application. You got to go and physically go to the Boston Conservatory on 8th of Fenway, and you have to audition, and you have to do a monologue, two monologues, and you have to sing two songs and do a dance and do multiple routines to get approved and accepted to go to the school. And then they evaluate everything and let you know. And I probably did about, my high school days, I probably did about like 12 musical theater auditions. And then I got accepted, went to the Boston Conservatory.
Did you go to a performance high school? Sorry to cut you off.
No, I did not.
Okay, so all this is on your own accord. I mean, every high school has a certain, and it varies, I'm assuming, from advanced to low-level theater programs. I'm not sure what your high school was, but I'm assuming you really had to go outside the box and your parents had to jump in and help you out, right?
My mom flew with me all over the world, Boston, Cincinnati, like all over, to go to all these different interview audition, you know, processes. And it was taxing on her, but a lot of fun. It was good bonding.
Yeah.
And then after my first year of college, being there, singing, dancing, acting every day, like loving it, I got a job in New York doing a summer stock job. And then literally within 4 days of being at this summer stock theater, I was on stage rehearsing. And I was trying out new things with my body, and I was like moving my body in different ways, but I was rehearsing in like heels that I probably shouldn't have been rehearsing in. I kind of love shoes. I fell, like twisted my leg a certain way, and fell directly on my left kneecap, and I broke my leg.
Oh my God.
And I was a little like unconscious for a while, and they took me to a, threw me in an ambulance, and I don't even remember a lot.
That pain must be severe, or did your body shut down because it goes into shock?
Yeah, your body goes into shock, which is what I mean by the unconscious. So I don't even remember like the ambulance ride. I remember none of that, but just waking up in a hospital in Saratoga Springs, New York, where I was doing the show. And this nurse with really bad bedside manner looked at me and was like, "It ain't pretty, girl. Like, it ain't good for you." And I thought I was dreaming. Like, I thought I was like literally in a weird, like, crazy movie. And then I was back first class because I had this big cast on my leg.
Yeah, as always.
Stayed with my parents, and I had to figure out like the next step of my life. And I was like, okay, well
let me ask you
back.
Something though. Let me real quick. See, you break your leg. I mean, you're. I don't know the level. I assume in musical theater there's a certain level of dance and song. But the way I see musical theater in a lot of ways, you can do it without. I mean, how much were you doing physically? Like, that's almost like an injury that they would say to, like, a football player or a ballerina or something, like, hey, you snapped your leg in half, it's over. But I feel like you're singing and dancing. Shut it down?
I was on full scholarship, and, like, in order to stay at the Boston Conservatory, we had to dance 5 days a week. There was always, like, ballet, tap, modern, jazz. And then your singing classes, your acting classes. Like, there was no mathematics. There was no science. It was only classes. It was a BFA program. So it was only classes, acting, singing, dancing. It was brilliant. It was like, I was so happy to get accepted. I was so happy to be there. And then I was told, you can't go back. Like, you can't dance anymore. You got to take off, and you might be in a wheelchair for a little bit. And you got to be off your feet. So, I took some time off and went to a community college.
See, I played football in college, and they call that a gray shirt year. When you're on full ride and you get injured where you can't play, they call it a gray shirt year, but you're still able to come back. You're saying the Boston Conservatory was like, yo, you're not able to participate, so it's a wrap on you, and you decided to bow out?
I mean, it was kind of a mutual decision. I knew I mean, the doctor was also, like, very conservative and kind of gave you the worst case scenario. It was like, you can't bike ride, you can't run, you can't this, you can't dance, like, for this amount of time. So it was like, well, okay, what can I do? So I spent a lot of time watching movies and studying Greta Garbo and, you know, and watching old Marlon Brando movies.
How long were you off your feet for with that injury?
I mean, I had a lot of help from mom and dad. I had a lot of help, like, even washing my hair and doing, like, basic things.
Sure.
For a good few months. I mean, it was tricky. But then my life turned around, and it was a blessing in disguise because I spent the time watching movies and going, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to move to California, and I'm going to focus on acting and be in film and television, and that's decided. Uh-huh. My parents were like, okay. So that's what I did. I applied to UCLA, USC, a bunch of, you know, good college.
Is there any depression that comes in there? Because, I mean, we're talking about a young girl whose whole life is wrapped up in the arts, and she's going to a school specifically for the arts. She's getting a full ride from. They're giving her X amount of dollars a year in an education to do that, and then it just crumbles. I mean, there must be some severe depression you had to go through before you can come to that conclusion, right?
Oh, absolutely, and that's what's so fascinating. It's like, it's kind of like, it's exactly like, actually, what everyone tells you in life. They're like, in order to, you know, rise, you have to experience what it's really like at the bottom. And, like, yeah, I hit bottom. I was depressed. I didn't want to eat. I broke up with my boyfriend at the time. I just was kind of like, I don't want to see anyone. I just want to stare at the wall, watch some movies. Like, I needed to figure out what was going on. Like,
yeah.
What was really going on with physically, mentally, spiritually. So, yeah, I definitely went to a dark place. And I feel like, but I see the light now, of course, because it's like, if I didn't break my leg, I wouldn't be living in California. I wouldn't have received all the abundance and all the amazing things that have happened to me because I now live in California.
Okay.
Because my head took this turn. It was almost like the injury forced me to go, okay, what else you got? Like, what else am I going to do with my life besides singing, dancing, and acting? All right, let's reverse it. Let's act first. Let's put the acting in first. And then I applied to a bunch of schools in California, got accepted to UCLA, transferred, and then spent the rest of my life living here in California, focusing on film and television. There are moments where I'm like, one day I'll be on Broadway, and one day I'll have that dream, absolutely. But, like, it's all in timing. Like, it'll come at the right time.
So this actually is a good segue into the next thing I wanted to talk to you about. So you're this well-trained, highly trained artist, right? And this is interesting because every actress has a different view upon nudity. And you seem to be pretty free with yourself. And even though you are highly trained, that doesn't mean that nothing to you is like, I'm not doing that because I'm too good for that, or I'm too highly trained to do that. And you know what's funny is the more stuff I'm in and the more people I meet that are at NYU Tisch, that are at whatever the school is in Lincoln Center, the prestigious, like, why am I blanking on the name of this school? Anyways, they're, like, really open with their bodies, and they're ready to roll. Like, it's whatever. What was your decision, and was it a hard decision for you to pick up roles that actually show your body? Were you, what made you okay with that? What was kind of the process you went through? I had a woman on who just did something on Netflix, and she was telling me about, and she's trained here in New York like you were trained at the Boston Conservatory, and she was kind of telling me that it was a good project, so she just did it. Is that kind of how it went for you as well?
Yeah, I mean, it depends on the material, it depends on the role, it depends on who you're acting with, who's the director, what it's for. I will say there are a lot of things in my past that I used to do that I won't do now, and I do believe there's power in saying no to roles. And there
sure,
are roles.
Sure. What was the stuff in the past that you wouldn't do now, if you don't mind me asking?
You don't
have to say particular projects. I know you want to blow anybody's spot up, but just from your perspective.
No, I mean, there are some co-star roles I played on TV that had topless nudity. Would I do a co-star with nudity now? No, not now. If I'm going to do nudity now, it has to be guest star, reoccurring, series regular, or better. For a co-star role, that's something I did when I was 20, 21, 22, 23. Like, I don't need, I already have those credits. I already booked those roles, so I wrapped up those credits for doing that. It only took you so far as career level. So, yeah, there are a lot of things I used to do that I won't do now. Do I regret any of the decisions I've made? Not at all.
No, it doesn't sound like that.
To where I am now.
Yeah, it seems like you're. It's more of a logical business decision. It's not about the nudity. The nudity is where it is. How do you have you always been really comfortable with your body? Is that something that is you've been known for in your private life, that you're like a woman who walks around her house naked, or you just love the way you look, so you're totally okay? I mean, I'm sure there's some level of uncomfortability there, but what's your level?
I think it's something I grew into. Yes, I have been to nudist resorts, and I consider myself a nudist, and I do sleep naked and walk around the house naked, and I feel.
She has clothes on right now, everybody. Just to let you know.
I do.
I didn't get that lucky.
I do. That'd be a really interesting. But that wasn't always the case. Mm-hmm. And when I was much younger, when I was 12, 13, 14, in my teenage years and my adolescence, I actually suffered with eating disorders, and I was very not okay with my body, even though I was very thin. And I mean, I suffered with anorexia, I suffered with bulimia, and I think that's very common in a lot of girls who grew up in middle class or wealthy families, that are overachievers, that are A personalities, and then especially that are in the entertainment industry, that are actors and singers and dancers and all that, especially as a dancer. I mean, I have very strong memories of being in ballet class as like a 10-year-old girl and feeling like, oh my God, I have boobs, and I shouldn't have boobs, and this is fat, and there are other girls who don't have boobs. And, you know, I mean, it was weird. When I was younger, I was actually very uncomfortable, even though I was thin. And I look back now on my body and go, oh my God, like I was so little. But yet I thought I was so fat then, and I thought I was so disgusting. And so no, I wasn't always.
How did you get out of that? Like, how did you beat bulimia? How did you beat anorexia? What happened?
Love happened. Falling in love with myself, having someone else fall in love with me, seeing myself through his eyes, seeing myself, having support, having unbelievable love. I mean, my parents put me through all the typical nutritionalists and therapists and psychic and psychiatric and, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time I was in the hospital and they were like, she needs to eat something.
Wow, that must be pretty intense. That's pretty.
Yeah.
That's pretty severe. If that's how that's where it got for you, you know, that's a lot of like coming to a crossroads for yourself, right?
Yeah. Like I said, there's been a lot of. I think to be as grateful and to understand like the journey I'm on now, you have to go to the dark places. So yeah, mm-hmm. Every moment of my life has led me to where I am now, and I'm super grateful and super confident. But it wasn't always like that.
That's kind of exactly. It sounds kind of scary, though. Like your parents put you through all the proper steps, which is great. Which is the seeing the therapist, nutritionalist, and getting you the help that you need. But your first thing was being loved by a man. That in itself could be really great, but also really, especially for a young girl, I'm assuming, just from me going through adolescence myself, could be really heart wrenching too. If you lose that love. Or, you know, because things end, especially when you're 14. When you lost that person, or, you know, when the relationship ended, did you have a fallback? Or at that point, you were far enough along in your recovery that you didn't jump back into any of that other stuff you were doing before?
I dabbled with eating disorders from probably a young age to, maybe like 20.
Wow.
It was definitely... There were peaks and valleys with it. I mean, it was bad when I was young, and then it got better for a while, and then it started up again in college. It's like I had triggers. You know, uh-huh. Something really stressful would happen. Or even in college, I had one really profound memory of being invited to, like, Leonardo DiCaprio's birthday party with Tobey Maguire in Vegas. And it was me and, like, two other girlfriends. And it was, like, the cool – I don't want to say it was the cool thing to do, but it was, like, we all were just so nervous about how we looked and how we felt, and we were all like in the bathroom throwing up our lunch before going to this like big party that evening. But I mean, it was very manageable. It was very manageable to be doing this whole eating disorder thing because I could, you know, cover it up and brush my teeth and make myself look beautiful again, like, and then go out and show my face and not have anyone know.
Yeah.
So definitely like a dark secret that was in and out for a while. But it was a process. I mean, it wasn't just like, oh, one man loves me, and then
of course.
Myself. Like it took the time of me understanding self love.
Yeah.
And really falling in love, seeing his love for me, and then just really echoing that, and really seeing what it's like to really love yourself. So yeah, it took a lot of self help books, took a lot of mantras and affirmations, but yeah, I've completely.
I think people don't understand that, because I talk about addiction a lot on this show, because I've been to like Sex Addicts Anonymous meetings, and I've been really open on the show about what it is to go through, and what through the journey so far, it's exactly what you're saying, is that it used to be really, really bad. Then I have moments where it would just pop up, or I have my triggers, like you said, and then it was like here and there, and then it kind of dissipates. The party's over. It's the excitement in it, what the value that I thought it brought to me is devalued, and now I'm kind of in that phase where I don't want to anymore, which took years and years and years. And I think that's kind of similar to what you're talking about when you're sharing your story, is that it. The ritual of it, like the ritual for me, the ritual of it was amazing, what I would do in those moments. It made me feel like I had control, and I'm sure a lot of it has to do with control with something like bulimia, right?
Absolutely. It's all about control.
Yeah.
It's all about control. Absolutely. And you make a lot of sense in saying this. You're right. It was like the high faded, and I started to see, like, oh, this is kind of gross. Like,
yeah.
Growing up, like, I'm going to ruin my teeth enamel, and I'm a really big fan of teeth, and I actually think I have really nice teeth. But it got to a point where if I didn't stop this horrible habit, I wouldn't still have nice teeth.
Oh yeah, they rot out of your head. I mean, that's toxic shit. Yeah, no, that's crazy.
Too much acidity from growing up. And,
yeah.
And it was just, honestly, it was taking up so much of my freaking time. I mean, it was...
Exactly.
It was so exhausting to be, like, living two lives, where it was, like, the life of me pretending everything's fine, and then the secret life of me, like, eating, like, three cakes and then throwing them all up. Like, that takes time.
Yeah, oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Like, yeah, I remember...
So you could eat three cakes?
I had some memories of, like... I remember one day that was really stressful. I forget what the trigger was, but I remember, like... I think I bought two cakes. Key lime pie and, like, something chocolate. And I was all excited to, like... Hear something.
That's the ritual. Yeah,
like
that's the ritual.
Something really happy was about to happen, and then something negative happened, and then I got triggered, and then I ended up like eating the cakes that I went to the end of the world to buy these cakes. Like, I went really far, I drove really far to go buy them. I went to the special bakery, and it wasn't even for me, it was like for somebody else. It was a crazy story, right?
Yeah.
And I don't remember all the details, but I do remember eating like two cakes that were going to be like birthday cakes for like multiple people.
Yeah.
And then feeling like my whole stomach is like expanded and bloated and horrible and shitty, and then, you know, sticking a toothbrush down my throat and forcing myself to throw it all up, and then just feeling exhausted and weak and tired, and it was like an entire day, like my day
spent.
Was we're binging and purging, like I didn't get anything accomplished that day.
Addiction takes away so much from what you should be doing. And even I'm a really active guy, and I look at all the hours I spent with my addiction, and I still got some things done, but imagine if I was spending the time doing the right things, what I could be doing, you know? That's a really interesting tidbit. Like, that's something people don't realize, is the fucking time it takes to be destructive. It's a lot more than sitting around and not doing anything. I mean, being destructive takes energy and time.
It's so true. And when I think about how much now I accomplish in a day and how much I'm focused on, I mean, I have accountability lists, and I have, like, list of things I get done every day, and I'm so productive, and I have an accountability partner. Like, I don't have time for anything that's going to distract my mind from what it needs to be doing.
And you're like a curvy Italian girl, so I could imagine if you have that really morphed body outlook, it must fuck with you if you have curves, even though that's like a positive thing in this day and age to have
now
curves.
Now I like embrace my curves and touch my boobs and love my boobs.
You're thankful for them.
Yeah, I mean...
Every morning you give thanks to your tits and ass. That's awesome.
It's true. But definitely you have to go through, like, that was one of the darkest days. The two cake day was, like, me hitting rock bottom.
Yeah.
Like, me ODing, or that was the worst. And it's like, okay, this can't continue. Like, you have to hit rock bottom before you get to the top type of thing again. So I'll never forget that day. It was dark and morbid and horrible, and yet...
The silver lining is that's the point that probably got you to where you have to the right path, right? Now, when you're acting, have you had a chance to do some roles, maybe not directly related with your eating disorder, but you're able to draw from those experiences? I mean, I know because I'm trained method that you can pretty much find anything you could be an astronaut and find something random in your life to connect to and focus on. But when it comes to some roles you've had, have you had anything yet that actually kind of gets you in that mindset? And you're able to go back there and utilize that darkness?
You know, it's interesting. I've actually played more lighter reels. If you look at my reel, I've definitely had more opportunities in comedy. The Dog Who Saved Summer, I was supporting you in that, and you know, lots of children's movies.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking, because on your reel, you do a lot of lighter stuff, and I wondered, oh, has she had a chance to really fucking find that and go back to that ugly place and use it, you know?
No, I mean, I actually, the majority of the roles I've done, you know, I did a movie with Paul Sorvino and Marley Matlin, I was a real estate agent, very happy, very perky. Like, those are the roles that I'm stereotypically more getting cast for, is the happy, perky. I did just book a movie that I'm shooting the last 2 weeks of May, and I'm playing a detective, so it's not happy and perky.
Sure.
And the movie is actually all about suicide. It's about a girl who committed suicide, the entire movie is about. It's very dark. But have I actually gotten a chance to play something that's like someone, like an addict or suffering? No, not at all. No, I really haven't.
Would you like to, or is that something you would avoid? Is that not your forte, or...?
It's something that I haven't done yet, but it's not something that I would avoid. I think that because of the past body of work that I've done, because of what I'm currently getting cast in a lot as, it kind of goes to that trend. You know what I mean? Like, people kind of continue to see you on that trend and you continue to book those type of roles. I just got new headshots maybe 5 months ago, and they're a little darker and they're a little bit more detective-like, and that's, I think, where this detective role came from. So you kind of have to push the industry into, like, how you want to be shown.
Yeah, you got to create your own conversation, right? You got to put stuff out there that you think, you know, this is what I am, and then do the work, almost do the work for them. Like, hey, look, this is what I am, and
exactly.
And then you find it that way.
So this detective is kind of like me stepping into a little bit more of, like, a new, darker territory, and I think from there, it'll evolve into more darker, more grittier. But so far, it's been pretty light.
And you're hoping that it comes to a more serious place, some of these roles. Is that kind of like the thing, or you're just kind of going with the flow?
I think eventually it will. I'm not mad at playing the fun, light. I mean, there's nothing more fun than being in a comedy. I just worked on Bad Moms with Mila Kunis, Christina Applegate, Kristen Bell, and it's with the same guys who created The Hangover, John Lucas and Scott Moore. And it was such a blast. I mean, when you're working on like a badass comedy that's like laugh out loud funny, it lifts your mood. I mean, you can't help but like be happy. Just like you said when you were walking around Venice with your salad, you know, you can't help but be happy when you're like in a comedy. You know what I mean? So there's something to be said about that. This detective role will be a little darker. Like, it might, the movie in general will have a darker tone. It's definitely not a TV movie. It's not a movie, you know, to watch with your kids. So it will bring up darker stuff. And that's fine. And I think it's important, though, when you do roles like that, that you have the balance, that you have the gratitude practice, you have the yoga, you have the meditation. And like, maybe years ago I wouldn't have been able to handle the darker roles, but now I am.
Is it hard to go back there? I mean, because my acting training, I'm always like, oh, I want to figure out a way to go back there, maybe because I'm crazy. But do you find it like it really does affect you emotionally to have to go to that place? And this is why it's good that you do all of the mantras and the yoga and the hiking and the whatnot. Do you think that that's kind of what it is about your personality? You really don't want to go there?
I don't think it's that I don't want to go there. I think if you're an actor or you're an actress, you go to all different places.
Sure.
That's just part of our deal. And yeah, I've been in horror movies before, and I've been in movies where, you know, there's blood and guts and darkness, but not yet playing, like, the addict or playing... I think people see me... It's also, like, how the industry sees you. I think that people see me more as, like, the upper-class professional attorney or the DA or the girl who steals the lead girl's boyfriend and is a little malicious and sassy, very desperate housewives, very devious maids type of characters. I think that, you know, until you're Meryl Streep, you are playing a little bit more of a niche. And that's okay. I mean, I'll take the niche. I'll take the stereotypes until we're... I mean, Meryl's one of the few people who kind of, like, completely does the...
circle.
You know, plays everything. Yeah. Most people kind of do play a little bit more of, like... You notice a pattern.
Yeah, so as a female in the industry, you always hear about age, especially, you know, actresses love to talk about when... I was listening to Olivia Wilde talk about how she was going to play somebody's mother when she's, like, 35, and she's playing someone's mom. And you realize, like, how short the window is for certain type of roles. Yeah. Do you feel the effects of that now? And if so, is there a game plan put in place for yourself? I mean, I'm not asking you to predict the future, but I'm assuming since you have a whole list of accountability, that game planning is right in your wheelhouse. So what are your thoughts?
I think that the juicier roles are actually when you are in your 30s and not in your 20s. And I have recently embraced more of playing the older roles. This protective role that I'm playing is a 35-year-old woman who has a teenage daughter. Do I have kids? No. Certainly don't have a teenage daughter. I don't have any children. And so that to me is like an older mindset. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think you have to embrace it. And I mean, age is just a number. I think it's a lot about how you feel. People always told me, even as a child, that I'm like an old soul and I'm very mature for my age. So, I mean, as long as I look and feel young and fun and free, it's okay to go to these places where you're playing older roles. And I think it's important to accept your age. I have a lot of actress friends that I have an actress friend I don't think it's something about lying, but like I have an actress friend who's a grandma actually, and she has grandchildren, and her agent submitted her for like 65, and she wrote back to him and said, "I don't play a day over 63."
It's kind of
65. You're like, really?
We're kind of drawn straw. It could be picking it. I know what you're saying.
I said like, you're nuts to tell me. I was like, you're gonna turn down this opportunity.
Splitting
I was like,
hairs.
Age is just a number. Yeah, and it's like, how does someone look 63 versus 65? I mean, who knows? And she was like, they're not gonna believe me at 65. Like, promise me, 63 is my limit. And it's like she's putting this boundary on herself. And so I really understood, and I've seen other examples of other people do things like that, and I go, okay, I don't want to do that, so I need to be open, and I've definitely gone out for roles that I thought to myself, wow, I don't think I play that old yet, but okay, I'll try it, and then actually end up getting a call, and I'm doing well, so you never know, right? You never know, yeah.
What's your ideal situation? If you woke up tomorrow, and you're like, okay, if my career was here, everything would feel fine. And I'm not saying that even exists, but it's a fun little game to play. Like, would it be a lead in a sitcom? What would it, like, what, give me specifics that you can draw up in your mind.
One of my goals is this year to book a series regular in a TV series that shoots and airs this 2016, working with award-winning collaborators that feel like family, and having that shoot be somewhere outside of America, so I'm traveling. And then I'm also producing this year, so I have multiple producing goals. And I have a executive producer credit on one movie right now, so by the end of 2016, I want to have two executive producer credits on two TV movies. And I would love, more than anything, to be working on a movie musical. A movie musical, like a remake of Guys and Dolls playing Adelaide, or a remake of West Side Story. So I'm singing and dancing and acting in this movie, but it's a big production, much like Mamma Mia or Moulin Rouge or any of those type of movies. That would be phenomenal.
So where can my people find you?
Yeah.
I want them to find you. You're amazing. I'm a fan. I think we're quite smitten with each other. The chemistry has been off the charts. The fire through Skype. It's hard to handle.
So, naked.
I know. Well, she has her clothes on. I'm naked. Tell them, like, what's your Twitter? What's your handle? Can they go Facebook? And tell them about any projects they can look out for.
Absolutely. You can go to my website, ChristinaDeRosa.com, ChristinaDeRosa, ChristinaDeRosa.com. I'm definitely on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm on them all. Twitter is @ChristinaDeRosa. Instagram is @ActressChristinaDeRosa. Facebook is @ActressChristinaDeRosa and ChristinaDeRosa. I have two accounts. You can find me on YouTube. You can find me everywhere. Everything's on my website, so my website will redirect you to all the social media links. And I'll be in the movie Bad Moms. That will be out on July 29th in movie theaters.
Awesome. So everyone go check her out in the movie. You are amazing. Did you have fun?
Had a great time.
Aren't you glad we did this?
It was an open book and told you so much.
Yeah, we dug deep. We dug to the heart of the matter. It was like I was a guy hitting on you in New York, and I brought all the honesty and all the passion. And yet, Make sure you guys, that's Christina. Christina, my girl, you're amazing. Thank you for taking the time, even with your loud ass office and your work list. I know you're very busy and you killed it. Thank you so much. My viewers appreciate you sharing your life and the struggles with your eating disorder, bulimia. And I got to tell you, I mean, the fact that you reveal that to this audience, it couldn't have come at a better time considering what this show just faced and the attacks it just faced a few days ago. So, that being said, I cannot thank you enough for coming on and being really open. Make sure you guys go out and you follow Christina DeRosa. You follow her career. You go to her website. You support what she does. You follow her Instagram. You follow her Twitter. We need to support people, and this is the kind of people we need to support. So make sure you guys go out. I'm getting all emotional. Make sure you guys go out and do that. You can always email the show, slampigpodcast@gmail.com. I'll read your emails on the air. Any guests you think I should have on, just hit me up. Let me know. I'm here to do that. You can always go to the Twitter and follow that. That would be great, @slampigpodcast. I also post pictures of my guest, @slampigpodcast, on Instagram as well. And you can always follow me, Josh Accardo, @JoshAccardo, on all of the above. And you can always go to joshaccardo.com to actually go and see maybe I'm in your city doing stand-up. All right, guys, I got to tell you, I'm sorry if I got off a little bit of an emotional rant, but I think I want to be a part of a certain revolution, and this is the revolution I want to be a part of. Just because somebody's popular doesn't make them good, and we're in a society now where people blindly follow one another if they're popular. It is not important anymore to be good at what you do, you know? And the separation between generations is so vast now because of technology and how expedited it's become. We got to start fighting back. The people that actually want to be tastemakers and do good things, you know, I'm all for people feeling good about themselves. I'm all for empowering individuals. But that doesn't mean you get to reverse bully them. Okay? You can't tell me there's no place for me and my voice because your voice is so PC and so great that there's no more room for me when I'm out here changing perspectives and I'm changing people's lives, you know? And perfect example, episode 98, right here with you, Christina DeRosa. Thank you so much, guys, for listening. You're amazing, and I'll be speaking with you guys next week. Take it easy.